You know, the Apostle Paul metaphorically compared our spiritual lives to a race. In 2 Timothy 4, verses 7 and 8, I'll just start over here and give you a little FaceTime to begin with. He says, I fought the good fight. I finished the race. I've kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day. And not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing. Today I want to talk with you about the type of race course that we have in front of us, that God has prepared for each one of us to run. We'll see that how Jesus ran his race. And like a road rally race, maybe you're not familiar with that term, but you will be when I finish today, he wasn't in a hurry to finish, as some of his followers wanted him to do. What about you? Are you ahead of time? Are you behind? Are you right on time with the route that God has planned for you? What is a road rally? Road rally racing, also known as Monte Carlo style racing or speed, time, distance road rallies, are unlike drag racing, which is a race to get from point A to point B faster than the guy that's driving in the other lane. Drag racing or oval course stock car racing, with you have 500 miles in an oval around an oval track, or 250 miles or whatever it is, but stock car racing. And there's also Formula One racing, Grand Prix style, which measures speed and time over multiple days. Basically, all other motorsports and racing are trying to get from point A to point B the fastest as they can. But it's not what road rally racing is about. It is about timing and precision, not just to see who can get from point A to point B the fastest. Road rallying is a contest of precision. Contestants follow a prescribed route that was been prescribed, a prescribed route at the average legal speeds. There's no speeding in road racing, rally racing. The contestants visit checkpoints where their passage is timed. You're allowed a certain amount of time to get from point A to point B. And if you're short, you get points. If you're over or you're late, you get points. The idea is to be like golf, get the low score. You don't want to win points in that kind of racing. But it's where contestants will visit those checkpoints. And road rally has been described as a scenic drive with a purpose, a chance to enjoy a day with a friend. The least expensive form of motorsport, and as one participant described it, the most intense thing I've ever done. Considering that his most intense thing was done on a public road without breaking any laws and in a car with absolutely no modifications, it's clear that road rally is much more than a simple phrase can describe. Because events do not involve speed, teams don't need specialized equipment for their car. Although there are classes of vehicles with road rally specific equipment on them, often teams will do the events with only pens and paper and a wristwatch. On the rare occasion of the road rally is held at night, a small flashlight might be needed. But for entry fees, the events are usually $40, $50 a piece for entry, and the events will have classes for road rally novices. So if you're a beginner and you just want to go out and try that, the local automobile club probably has a schedule of races that you can use to develop road rally racing skills. Road rally starts months in advance when the organizers plan a route for the teams to follow. They determine safe and legal speeds for each of the portions, and then they write up a step-by-step instructions on where to drive using distance, landmarks, or even mystery-style clues for teams to follow. So at the various checkpoints, you can find out how well you're doing and how well you're doing with your competitors as well. In some cases, they'll have that information available, but at least you'll know where you are in the event. And as I say, there can be clues and mysteries and some things you got to figure out to know how to get to the next destination at what the time is and so forth. So when designing the route, the organizers make sure to set average speeds below the speed limit for the roads traversed. Competitors should never feel the need to speed or drive unsafely to meet time goals. The goal of a road rally is precision, not risk. Precision, not risk. When the day of the event arrives, the teams will compete to see who is the best at reading the route instructions carefully, following the route, and maintaining the assigned average speeds. Road rally teams are made up of two people, with one of them being the driver, keeping eyes on the road, and the other a navigator, reading directions and figuring out times and helping spot landmarks. Have any of you seen on television or anything road rally racing? Some have. Yeah, some have. It's not as popular as it once was as a sport, but especially in England, it's still very popular, I understand. The competition is measured by when teams arrive at precisely measured checkpoints set up along the rally route, where the exact arrival time has been calculated based on this designated average speeds. Penalty points are assigned if a team arrives at the checkpoint late or early. The further off the time, the more points the team gets, and when the team time comes to hand out trophies, the lowest score wins. It's a different kind of race than we typically think about. We think about racing to get there faster than everybody else, and that's the way most racing is. But it depends on the rules of the game that you're playing, of the race, the type of course that you're participating in. When it came to Jesus, there were times that precision timing was very, very important. In the beginning, when in the course of time a child would be given, Matthew 1, verses 21 through 23, Matthew 1, verses 21 through 23, "And she will bring forth a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, for he shall be saved, or will save his people from their sins." His name would be precisely Jesus, told, not something more or less. Verse 22, "So all of this was done that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the Lord through the prophet, saying, Behold, the virgin shall be with child and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel," which is translated God with us. It was precision that brought them to Jerusalem, for paying the Roman taxation and census that was being conducted at that time of the year after the Feast of Tabernacles. They had to be there during the Feast of Tabernacles for God's purposes, and for the Romans, they piggybacked on the time and knew that people would be there with money, and that would be the best time to collect taxes. The wedding in Cana, that we read about in John 2, verses 2 through 4. John 2:2-4. And you know the setting, the wedding party had been partying and celebrating after the ceremony, and they had run out of wine. terrible thing to have happen. But now, both Jesus and his disciples were invited to the wedding. Verse 3, and when they ran out of wine, the mother of Jesus said to him, they have no wine. And Jesus said to her, woman, what does your concern have to do with me? My hour has not yet come. He's on a path, and to get to that destination, that next checkpoint, he has to be there at the right time. And coming too soon would be penalized for finding out who he was and what he was, what his real intent was, and what the message behind his arrival meant to the world. It was precision, but he yielded and made the wine, and of course it was found to be better than that they had had at first, and so forth. But he didn't really want to do that. His time hadn't come. In John 7, verses 1 through 10, we read of another example of how he was tried. People tried to push him faster and to do things that he didn't have yet in that leg of his race. After these things, Jesus walked in Galilee. This is John 7, verses 1 through 10. For he did not want to walk in Judea because the Jews sought to kill him. And now the Jews' Feast of Tabernacles was at hand, and his brothers therefore said to him, depart from here and go into Judea, that your disciples may see the works that you're doing. For no one does anything in secret while he himself seeks to be known openly. Did Jesus seek to be known openly? No, not at this point. It wasn't time yet. That's on a different leg of his race. For even his brothers did not believe in him. Verse 6, and Jesus said to them, my time has not yet come, but your time is always ready. They're ready to go race right now, and whatever the kind of race that you want to do that involves getting here quick. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify of it that its works are evil. You go up to this feast. I'm not yet going up to this feast, for my time has not yet fully come. And when he had said these things to them, he remained in Galilee. The verse 10 says, but when his brothers were gone up, then he went up to the feast, not openly, but as it were, in secret. His time had not come yet to be open about what his mission was. In Matthew 8, verses 1 through 4, Matthew 8, 1 through 4, he healed a leper, and he often told his recipients, go and tell no man what that he had done. Matthew 8, 1 through 4 says, when he had come down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him. And behold, a leper came and worshipped him, saying, Lord, if you're willing, you can make me clean. Jesus put his hand out and touched him, saying, I am willing, be cleansed. Immediately his leprosy was cleansed, and Jesus said to him, see that you tell no one, but go your way, show yourself to the priest, and offer the gift that Moses commanded as testimony to them. In Mark 7, we read again of another healing of a deaf man, verses 32 through 36 of Mark 7. Then they brought to him one who was deaf and had an impediment of speech, and they begged him to put his hands on him. And he took him aside from the multitude and put his fingers in his ears and spat and touched his tongue. And then looking up to heaven, he sighed and said to him something that I don't know how to pronounce, Ephphatha, I'll go take it or leave it. That is, be opened. And immediately his ears were opened and the impediment of his tongue was loosened and he spoke plainly. And then he commanded them that they should tell no one. But the more he commanded them, the more widely they proclaimed it. They were cheering on, expecting a Messiah to deliver them from the Romans. And they were not about to take less than that from when they saw him and the miracles that he was performing. They knew that he was the Messiah, but they weren't expecting what was prophesied of his first coming. After he had fed the 5,000 people you're familiar with, John 6, verse 15, he says, "Therefore, when Jesus perceived that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, he departed again to the mountain by himself alone." It wasn't his time yet. He was pacing his time. He knew how long it was supposed to take to get from the start to the next point in the route that God had planned for him. The timeline for Jesus' final Passover was also needed to be carried out in the right times. Judas's betrayal in John 13:27, Jesus told him, "Now, after the piece of bread, Satan entered him," and Jesus said to him, "What you do, do quickly." Don't mess around now. We're not putting the brakes on. We've got to get to the next station at the right time. What followed was a timeline of events that had to be kept in order for the sacrificial death of Jesus, the Lamb of God. And the next day, he died precisely at the time the Passover lambs were being sacrificed in the temple. The resurrection of Jesus and exiting the tomb both had to come and occur precisely 3 days and three nights after Jesus died and was entombed. We read about that in Matthew 12:40. After the resurrection, the disciples followed his instructions to meet him in Galilee on a certain day on a mountain at a certain time. Notice, this is, I think, important. We're going to talk just a little bit about Peter here and help his reputation out a little bit. Matthew 26:32. He's speaking to the disciples. He says, "But after I have been raised," in other words, after the resurrection, "I will go before you to Galilee." And back up to verse 30 and 32. "And when they had sung a hymn," this is following the Passover, "they went out into the Mount of Olives, and Jesus said to them, 'All of you will be made to stumble because of me this night, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I've been raised, I will go before you to Galilee.'" So now come to John 21 with me. John 21, verse 3. "Simon Peter said to them, 'I'm going fishing.'" Now, I don't know how many times you've heard it, but I've heard it many times through the years, that Peter was giving up and just going to go back to fishing. I think it's contrary to that. He knows when he's supposed to be in Galilee. He knows when he's going to meet Jesus. Jesus has provided that information. The angel told him the same after the resurrection. And I think that he was just going. He had time just to spend between the resurrection and the time that he was supposed to meet Jesus, or they all were supposed to meet him in Galilee. So the rest of them said, "Well, we're going fishing with you too." And where did I go? Fishing, Peter, John. Simon Peter, yeah, "I'm going fishing." They said to him, "We're going with you also." And they went out and immediately got into the boat, and that night they caught nothing. There's a lot to be said about fishing, not much of which I care about. I don't mind catching. You know, I go fishing to catch. I don't like to fish. I don't have the patience for it. But if you're catching, I'm in. But these fellows had made a living at this. And they knew about fishing and some of the benefits. Is when you're fishing and not catching is that you have time to think. You have time to analyze. You have time to do anything you want. You just think. And I suspect that they just went out because they were comfortable, and if they got some fish, they got some fish. But otherwise, they were able to commune with one another. And I don't think that Simon Peter at all was giving up. He was just saying, we've got this time until we're supposed to meet Jesus in Galilee. I'm going to go fishing. And the others went along with him. Matthew 28:7 says, and go quickly and tell his disciples that he is risen from the dead. This is the angel speaking. And indeed, he's going before you into Galilee. There you will see him. Behold, I have told you. And the disciples went where they were supposed to be at the right time on that leg of Christ's journey in his race. In Acts 1, verses 6 and 7, we read again how the disciples, what they had been looking for, what they expected, how they expected to run the race. They say in verses 6 and 7 of Acts 1, therefore, when they had come together, they asked him and said, Lord, will you at this time restore the kingdom to Israel? Are we there yet? Have we finished this race? Are we there? No. He said to them, it's not for you to know times and seasons, which the Father has put in his own authority. The disciples were always thinking they were drag racing, not road rally racing. How fast could we get there? They wanted to be, of course, leaders themselves under Jesus Christ when he established his kingdom. They knew that was part of their reward, and they were excited about it. But Jesus was not yet through. What about our lives? Our lives. I said earlier that God prepared a race route for our lives, and he did it long before we were born. I cite a couple of scriptures just to give you some support for that. Jeremiah 1:5 says, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I sanctified you. I ordained you to be a prophet to the nations. And also Isaiah, God said to him, Isaiah said, the Lord formed me from the womb. So a long time before this, God had set apart people and called us and has a route, a course map laid out for us. It'd be nice if we could see that and know what's coming down on the next leg of the race, wouldn't it? But he doesn't give us that. But we have the opportunity, as we get to certain points in our life, checkpoints, I will call it, but the points where God gets our attention. And unfortunately, those are usually times of tragedy and mishap, sickness, illness, death, and so forth. We have to stop because we get stopped in our tracks and have to figure out where are we in our relationship with the Father and the Son. Sometimes it's a mystery. Sometimes there are clues. Sometimes there are no clues. But we need to make sure that we're on the course that he intended for us to have, that he planned for us in time. Are we ahead? Are we behind? Are we on time? And no, there's no, I know a shortcut. I know a shortcut between this point and our next station where we get checked in, the checkpoint. None of that. But he's overseen, I think, every major choice and event and important decision that we've made. He's not abandoned us at the checkpoints in our spiritual race of life, some of which, as I said, are clues and mysteries, and not easy to know which way to go. And when we find ourselves in that kind of situation, I would encourage you to actively guide your choices and responses to the trials and the opportunities of life, and to thank him for the blessings that come your way. Most importantly, God has predestined the timing of our calling and selection into His family at this time. Now, not during the tribulation, not during the millennium, nor during the second resurrection, but now as first fruits who will serve under Jesus in His kingdom. We are on schedule, I hope, to be growing in grace, knowledge, understanding of the work of Jesus to reconcile us to the Father through our belief and faith in His life, His death, and resurrection. Or are we like the disciples who desired and expected the kingdom to come in their lifetimes? Is that all we're focusing on, is the kingdom's coming? There's more involved in that, brethren. We have our faith to be tested and tried and found solid. Acts 1 verse 6, remember again the disciples said, therefore, when they had come together, they asked Him, saying, will You at this time restore the kingdom to Israel? The older we get, and I speak for myself as well here, we want the kingdom to come more, I think. Because we know that our days, half of this audience over here hasn't even hit their peaks yet. We're on the downhill side, most of us. I wish you a great life. I really do, and hope that you'll find your path. And know that don't be like those who said that the Lord delays His coming, so let's eat, drink, and be merry. Know that the Lord is on time, and eat, drink, and be merry. Because it's a good thing. Hebrews 12, verse 1, has a statement here that's a little difficult to wrestle with, but I'm going to help you out, I hope. Verse 1 in Hebrews 12. Wherefore, seeing we are also compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. I think we've got a little insight into what it means today to run with patience. We're not always to run the fastest that we can from point A to point B, but we're to be running with patience. Our spiritual race is not scored by how fast we can absorb knowledge or anything of that sort, but rather it's relationship with Jesus Christ and faith in the fact that the Father sent His only Son to die for our sins, to reconcile us to the Father. 2 Timothy 4, verses 7 and 8, we started with, and I'll conclude with it. I've fought the good fight, Paul says. I've finished the race. His was not a drag race or a stock car race. How fast could he get through everything? He had a tough route that God marked out for him. But he was comforted by the words of Jesus that my grace is sufficient for you. He had other problems that God didn't take care of, that He let him wrestle with, a thorn in the flesh, it says. His race was not an easy race to run. Finally, there's laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give me on that day. And not to me only, but also to those who love His appearing. Our life race is not to see how fast we can get there, but to get there at God's appointed time for us. Our race will no doubt be spattered with checkpoints of disappointment, discouragement, but don't give up on God. He's planned our race routes and the checkpoints along the way for our ultimate good. And let's not get ahead nor lag behind His planned course and timing. I pray that each of us will run with patience, win our race at just the right time, and receive crowns of righteousness.